Development to order. Welcome. Good afternoon. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3584. Do you need to tell us anything? Okay. Representative Hunt?
I don't think I'd actually gone through and described the changes in the amendments. Maybe that would be helpful. I've talked to all of you one-on-one about them, but okay. So we're all clear in terms of the record. If you look at the dash.
You need to make a motion.
I'm sorry. First. Madam Chair, I move the dash two amendments to House Bill 3584 be adopted.
All right. I have a motion to move the dash two amendments to House Bill 3584. Any discussion? Representative Hunt.
Thank you. These changes were following up on the first hearing that we had on this bill. If you look on the dash twos, I'll just point them out. They're highlighted on my copy, but not on yours. On line five, there was a suggestion that we add with the concurrence of the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate. So that was added in line five and six. On line 8 and 9, originally Ag and Forestry were one position on this group. At the suggestion of the committee, we divided that into two positions. Line 10, we added a position for Manufacturing. You'll notice on line 19 and 21, it's now clearly stated that those positions are advisory only, since those would both be public employees, one from the department side and one from a public employee union. And I think the only other change is on page 2, line 13 to 15. It was suggested that we add that as one additional charge for the group. And actually, there is one other change that you won't see here because we removed the two legislators who were here to help eliminate the fiscal impact of it.
Thank you. Any other discussion or questions? Any objections? Seeing none. We adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 3584. Representative Hunt.
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 3584 as amended be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. I have a motion to move House Bill 3584 as amended to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
And if I might, I might just say, I think we've dealt with all the fiscal issues because the department has said they have a budget to staff a task force like this. We've removed the legislators, which are the one piece, the per diem of the legislators is the one piece the department can't cover. But just the policy within the building that any task force go to Ways and Means. So we're not anticipating any additional impact, but that's part of the process.
Any further discussion? Seeing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 3584 has been. I'm sorry? Any objections one more time? None? Okay. So ordered. We've moved House Bill 3584 to Ways and Means with a due pass. I'll close work session on House Bill 3584. Okay, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3548. Kim, do you have anything, or do we want to just go straight to Representative Richardson? Representative Richardson.
Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3548 be adopted.
Can I have a motion from Representative Richardson to move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3548? Any discussion, or would you like to?
I'd like to explain what this will do.
Okay.
Basically, we're going to be taking out some of the wording that would have resulted in additional costs to the system. Where this bill removes the requirement in prior statute that Oregon Trade Representative be located in Shanghai, and this gives OECDD the opportunity to be flexible in where it will be best to locate to that trade representative for Oregon. And then the new wording to ORS 285A141 will be as follows. Promote, in conjunction with the Economic and Community Development Department, the development of trade and the use of Oregon's environmental protection expertise to expand opportunities for Oregon businesses in China, period.
Okay. Any further discussion on the dash one amendments? Do I have any objections?
Madam Chair?
Yes. Representative Hass.
Did you say that was added to it? I have the dash ones. Were you reading from the dash ones, Representative Richardson?
Yes, I was. I read the wording as it will appear. Well, actually, I read from my own copy. Let me. Let me look at what.
Okay, the dashed ones. Okay, the Connecticut.
Yes, I mean the actual. What I read was after the words tourism and travel in Oregon were deleted and the and was deleted, and then the last two lines were deleted. So I gave you the net result.
Okay. After it's been amended.
The movement of trade.
All right. Any further questions? Does that answer you? Does anyone have? Any objections to moving the dash one amendments? So ordered. Representative Richardson?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3548 as amended be referred to the House floor with the due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee of Ways and Means be rescinded.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. I have a motion to move House Bill 3548 as amended be referred to the House floor with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Any objections? Questions?
Well, I just have a question about. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question about that it might have a fiscal impact, and that originally didn't this bill need to go to Ways and Means?
Doris, would you like to come up and address that? I think she can answer this question for us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Doris Penwell from Economic and Community Development Department. The 3548, as amended and requested by Representative Richardson, really does allow the department a little more flexibility in terms of what we can do with promotion of trade with China, both inbound as well as exporting. And it removed the language that was removed by Representative Richardson's motion, really removes the additional responsibilities that we would have to undertake, because currently we don't provide tourism and travel discussions with China. It's sort of difficult at this point to do that sort of thing. In some of our other offices and trade representative positions around the world, we've certainly been involved in tourism and travel with the Oregon Tourism Commission, but in this instance, we haven't necessarily been. That doesn't mean we won't be open for opportunities in the future with the commission. But it would add a fiscal impact both to the commission as well as our own in the International Trade Division. The issue with regard to the students from Oregon University studying in China, et cetera, that is something that's taken care of and I believe is something that Representative Richardson is trying to pursue with some of the public and private schools in Oregon to be sure that's moving ahead, but it isn't something that our department necessarily needs to be directly involved in. So it does remove an impact for us so that we won't have to have a position to do that kind of coordination work. Okay. So from that standpoint, it looks like that this does not add a further fiscal impact to the department.
Okay.
In our minds.
Yes. No.
No?
No more. No more.
Any other questions?
So what's the vote on? Just to rescind that.
The motion is that it be referred to the House floor with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Representative Hatt.
Yeah, I appreciate what Representative Richards wants to do. I, too, have been on a trade mission to China, and I know there's tremendous opportunity there. But in some ways, I'm worried that we're micromanaging the department in terms of what we're asking them to do. And while there may be a lot of opportunity in China, I would hate to have them feel like they were required under this law to work on China and in some ways draw away from other efforts where there may be more promise in another country or or for that matter, California. And if we really want to be flexible here, and I appreciate your amendments here designed to do that, the most flexibility we could offer is to let them do their job without trying to micromanage them from the legislature.
Okay. Thank you. Any other discussion? Any other comments? The clerk will call the vote.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Representative
Hatt?
Nope. Representative
Hunt? Aye.
Representative
Mark? Aye.
Representative Bergen?
Aye.
Representative
Bagel?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 3548. Okay. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3613. Kim, do you want to, nothing to tell us? Representative Hunt, do you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 3613 be referred to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. I have a motion to move House Bill 3613 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
No.
Go ahead.
The I think we
Representative Hunt.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. I'm sitting in the Patty Smith seat on the other committee.
Oh, that's
so
okay.
I'm trying to be a little rebellious from
that's
time
okay
to time.
That's okay. It's okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we've heard a lot of the discussion around this, both pro and con, when we had the hearing, whenever that was, earlier this week.
Yeah.
I think, for me, it seems like the two fundamental positions come down to, should we as the legislature have the right or the role of being able to set some guidelines, some standards in terms of these investments. And I think both sides made very strong cases of why we do have a role or never should have a role. And I just think when it comes to the importance of investing in Oregon companies, when it comes to things like putting up a screen on investments in South Africa, I think there are times when it rises to a level that it meets that test for me. Certainly not all the time. But that's why I'll be supporting this bill. I would say, and I was handed some suggested amendments walking in that apparently are designed to help alleviate some of the concerns of the opponents. That because they're just conceptual at this point, they haven't been drafted. I thought I might just kind of put them on the record and then hope that the Senate acts to adopt these.
And I think we have people here that I'm going to invite up to answer a few questions.
Okay.
So go ahead, and then we'll do that.
If you look at the bill at the bottom of page 1 of House Bill 3613, these proposed amendments would eliminate the section that begins at line 27 on page 1. Eliminates lines 27, 28, 29, and turning over to page 2, the line 1 on page 2. Then continuing, if you jump down on page 2 to line 36, it would eliminate the words in line 36, nor more than 200 million. And in line 37, after Oregon, would add the words unless, comma, under the circumstances, comma, it is not prudent to do so. And then would delete lines 38, 39, and 40. I think the intent of these is to make it clear that the prudent standard test should hold, and that this, as a standard for investing in emerging growth businesses, can be laid alongside that standard of prudent investment. And so I think that is the goal. These are still conceptual, so I'm not moving those, but just wanted to put those on the record. I am certainly supportive of those changes, and would hope that even amidst our crazy timeline and moving legislation forward, that the Senate would add those on. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Edwards, would you like to come forward? Thank you and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And you have some additional information you would like to have shared
sure
with us?
Okay. I'd like to. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Randall Edwards, State Treasurer of Oregon. I wanted to pass out two items. One is an Attorney General viewpoint of this bill as written. Obviously, the amendments we're hearing are for the first time, and they didn't have the time to, quite frankly, look at those, nor have we. And then secondly is a letter from Olympic Venture Partners, and again, this is a firm, as I disclosed yesterday, the day before yesterday, that actually has money that does invest in Oregon. And I'd like to just kind of point out a couple of things from both of these documents. And I do apologize for this being last-minute information. I guess sort of the bill seems to be on a very fast track one way or the other. And I would like just to hit a couple of high points and maybe have Kate Richardson to drill down in the Department of Justice's comments, but I think they fall in line of what I was suggesting the challenge with this bill conceptually and legislatively, what it does to the Oregon Investment Council and to my office in managing other people's money and the trust doctrine that has driven the prudent person rule. And I would also suggest there was a new piece of information, as I also mentioned to you, in addition to other funds like the Public Employees Retirement Fund, the State Accident Insurance Fund, that there is these provisions in this bill also are inconsistent with Article 8 of the Oregon Constitution regarding the Common School Fund, which, as I recall, as I testified before, are specifically dedicated for the purpose of educating children. And to superimpose other public policy interests in how we manage money for that, again, raises, in their mind, a potential constitutional conflict with the bill. If I may just indulge you, and I'll just briefly on the Olympic Venture Partners, they provided, and they've been in this business for some time. I know you heard a lot from those who are in the marketplace who would suggest that there's a drought of capital. And in this document, if you turn to the second page outlined here, is a view of what the actual capitalization in the market looks like prior to the bubble bursting, going from 1997, the available cash out there. And these are largely firms in the Northwest that have an Oregon focus and a Northwest focus. And in looking at what's available today, substantial growth. So I think if there's an argument that somehow capital is unavailable, that is not necessarily true. And I just want to say, again, I got to disclose, this firm would benefit from this allocation should this become law, mandating us, as the conceptual amendment would still suggest, that it's a shall, that we shall put money to work in the state. And I just want to leave with this. As I said, I'm very interested in finding business opportunities for helping emerging growth businesses in the state. We have a vehicle in place in statute through the Oregon Growth Account. As I allayed, there's some concern about what's been happening to the money coming to us vis-a-vis the legislature. That's another debate that we could have at another time. And I want to point out that when that law was set up, we specifically excluded the prudent laws that govern these other people's money from that standard because the mandate was Oregon. And again, understand that's what this bill does. It mandates me, the Investment Council, as it's written, at a floor of $100 million to $200 million into Oregon. And my fear is beyond the legal problems, which I think you're going to find immediately we would have with this in trying to execute it by law. Secondly, would be the potential of having to put other people's money, good money, to work, which may or may not be in their best interest and potentially not get the returns that are believed to be sought in this intent. So I just want to say I'm very concerned that this bill has moved as quickly as it has. It does have some legal questions. Asking another chamber to try to amend a bill, that's your prerogative. But I think it'd be best to go slow. And I think, again, with the Attorney General's opinion, you've got something ahead of you that suggests that there are legal problems with this bill. And that, I think, should give us all pause.
Madam Chair, if I just wanted to draw your attention. I think most of you got a copy here of
the name.
Thank you.
That's okay.
Kate Richardson, Chief of Staff, Oregon State Treasury. Department of Justice's letter there that we did try to highlight for you some of the primary points that I will
note that particularly the constitutional concern and the legal concern about the specific purposes for these funds are not alleviated by the conceptual amendments that were put forth. And particularly the constitutional one could not be corrected without a constitutional amendment, because the purposes for the Common School Fund are laid out in the Constitution and, as you know, can't be changed statutorily. So that, and as the Department of Justice pointed out, that could definitely lead to lawsuits and damages for the state. So that would incur a cost for the state, which might take the place of any returns that could be expected. I wanted to be here to answer any questions about that, and then point out that this would, even with the conceptual amendments out in front of you, would be amending the prudent investor standard, which is a very strict and carefully drawn standard by which that guides the Oregon Investment Council. And even with the conceptual amendments, it would be, by forcing the state to look first to Oregon investments, would be amending that prudent investor standard. There are some practical concerns that the conceptual amendments don't address as well, including on the top of page 3, a section that hasn't been discussed at all. A person that enters into a contract under this section, the contract is probably not the correct word there anyway, because there are many, many, many contracts that the OIC enters into, which would probably reach much farther than the proponent's intent. So if you have any questions about some of the Department of Justice's concerns, I'd be happy to answer them, not on their behalf, but from our understanding of them.
Any questions for them? Representative Hunt.
Kate, maybe you could expand on what you're saying a little bit, or any of you. In terms of the, I could see how the base bill, without the conceptual amendment, changes the prudent standard. with the conceptual amendments, I guess I'm not understanding how that does change the prudent standard.
The prudent investor standard is 293.726, and the conceptual amendments would still leave in the 4A and B to look first at Oregon opportunities for diversification unless under the circumstances it is not prudent to do so. The Attorney General's or the Department of Justice's letter on the top of page 2, that paragraph discusses that. The meaning of to look first at Oregon opportunities, the poor guidance that would provide, but also very difficult to apply under the current investment arrangements. The mandate too, of course, implicates the prudent investor standard as well.
If I could follow up, Madam Chair, thanks for pointing that out. That's in terms of line 6 and 7, it strikes me as strange that even though the words unless under the circumstances it is not prudent to do so, it strikes me as strange, and I do see the letter you've given us here, but it strikes me as strange that could amend a prudent investment standard even though it says unless it's not prudent to do so. I guess the one other thing I would just point out so we're all clear in terms of the shall that's listed on line 33, especially with the conceptual amendment, that is just a shall up to 1%. If it was shall 1%, you'd be absolutely right. But it's still
my understanding
up to 1%, and then with the addition of not having at any one time less than $100 million, unless under the circumstances is not prudent, seems to tie that back to the prudent investment standard. So my understanding, the intent of those bringing the conceptual amendment is to retain that prudent investment standard as a high standard.
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, I do see that intent. However, it is amending the prudent investor standard, and it does add a different practical implementation of that standard. And so that, in just in the practical applications, could implicate it as well. It is, in the end, an amendment of that standard.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Chair,
Representative Mark,
something?
Go ahead.
Ms. Richardson, if you had two equally risky or equally sound, let us say, because you're not going to invest in risky investments, two equally sound investments, and one was in Oregon and one was somewhere else, would it be imprudent to invest in the Oregon one?
Let me answer that question first. I think after a due diligence that it would require us to look at the risk benefit, as you just described, and in a perfect world, as you're describing, I think that Oregon investment policy would have us put the money to work in Oregon.
So that's what we're just clarifying here.
Yeah. No, you're codifying a mandate that would suggest that we only look at Oregon first. And I'm suggesting that diversification in all our portfolio management, whether it's for the PERS fund, Common School Fund, we are blind to a mandate of where that money's going, because the first and foremost is to make sure we're getting a return on investment so that each of these beneficiaries are benefiting from that fund. We do, as I said earlier, I want to make it clear, we do look at Oregon investments. Olympic Venture Partners puts money to work here. We do find managers that have opportunities here in the state. But again, codifying a look only in Oregon first, it flies in the face, as the Attorney General is outlining here, the prudent standard that we've guided ourselves for years and making sure that we are good stewards of these monies. And these are other people's money.
Thank you. Representative Richardson, you had a question?
Well, I wanted to get a clarification from Representative Hunt. When the proposed amendments were being read, I thought I heard him say that on page 2, line 36, the proposed amendment would be to delete nor more than $200 million. But when I heard his response to the three panelists here, I thought he said that he's referring to the loss of $100 million. And so I'm not sure now which were going to be the recommended wording.
Go ahead.
And I may have misspoken. Let me read under the conceptual amendment what that subparagraph B would be. It would say, as amended, notwithstanding paragraph, and again, this is on page 2, line 35, notwithstanding paragraph A of the subsection, the council may not have investments at any one time of less than $100 million in emerging growth businesses in Oregon unless, under the circumstances, it is not prudent to do so.
And please keep in mind this is just a conceptual amendment.
Right.
There is no amendment. The motion is to move this to the floor of the debates. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Matthews, did you want to take a few minutes to just respond? I'm in work session, but I'd like to give you the opportunity to make any comments you would like to.
Thank you, Chair Smith, members of the committee. Harvey Matthews from Associated Oregon Industries. I have not had opportunity to look at the Attorney General's opinion as of yet. But in Section 1 of this bill, it restates current statute. Current statute says, starting on line 7, the availability of venture capital for the startup and subsequent expansion of new business is critical to the continued growth and development of the economy of Oregon. And there exists an estimated gap of between $100 and $200 million between available venture capital resources and the need of Oregon businesses for such resources. Investments in startups and expanding businesses can produce substantial positive returns for long-term investors. And pension funds managed by the Oregon Investment Council constitute a major financial resource of the state of Oregon, and that such funds may be prudently invested in startup businesses in this state under policies established by the Oregon Investment Council. That being said, in current statute passed in 1985, I find it strange that the Attorney General would now come out and say that this concept is imprudent.
Okay.
I want to take a moment and thank the representatives of the OEA, OSEA, and Firefighters Union for working with me to amend this bill conceptually, and I pledge to make these amendments hold on the Senate side. They care deeply about the jobs and economic development of Oregon. And although they weren't wildly supportive of this, once we got through the amendments, they are currently neutral on the bill. And I wanted to thank them for their hard. We did some intense negotiations in the last 24 hours since we last met. And also I wanted to thank Representative Greenlick and his staff for their work on this as well. And I'm not sure if it was read into the record that this letter, that Olympic Venture Partners currently benefits from the investments from the Oregon Investment Council, but I wanted to make that clear.
Okay.
And just state for the record that not all states in the union do apply a prudent investor statute. About half of them do. There are many other ways to look at the proper investment of these funds, including legislative oversight, but the treasurer has a great deal of ability in this way, depending on statute, to do that. And I just once again want to say thank you for your support of this bill and your hard work on it. I think it makes a big difference for jobs and economic development in Oregon. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions from Representative March?
Thank you. Harvey, on page 2, line 33,
yes,
we had discussion about shall and may, and mm-hmm. it's your intent to put may in the amendments?
Yes. In working with OEA and OSEA and firefighters, they felt considerably more relieved if the shall in line 33 was changed to may, and we are fine with that.
Okay, and for the follow up?
Yes.
And it's also your intent to put in the language about the prudent standard and such.
Yes, all of that which Representative Hunt mentioned, and including the change to line 33, is my intent to put in on the Senate side.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Any other questions, Mr. Matthews? Representative Berger?
It's not a question. I have a comment.
Okay.
Are we ready to move?
Oh, okay.
When we're ready to move.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Matthews? Not. Thank you very much. I have a motion to move House Bill 3613 to be referred to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Berger.
Yeah, now I have a comment. You'll note that my name is on this original bill, and when Representative Greenlick came to me with this, my immediate reaction was, when I give folks my money to invest, I don't tie a hand behind them and tell them I want you to invest. But because if the goal is investment, I want smart investors to use the prudent rule. And so he said, oh, but this is economic development and really important to Oregon. And I think that that is true. However, it is pension money. And I am still not comfortable enough to vote yes on this.
Okay, thank you. Representative Richardson?
I'd like to say that I am a great supporter of economic development, and I want to make sure that there is investment funds and venture capital. But language has consequence. And in this instance, and by the way, I also should say that for years I have been a trustee at different times, and currently I'm a trustee over funds for either disabled people or children. And that's part of the professional thing that I do, although I've never charged for that part of what I do. But when we're looking at what is being proposed here, the proposed amendments merely take off the cap, but it doesn't change the reality that this bill says that there shall be at least $100 million of pension money invested in emerging businesses. And it refers to what it defines an emerging business as that which is defined under ORS 348.701, which, if you look at that wording, talks about small or new businesses. We heard testimony as far as how the functioning of investments takes place through the Treasurer's Office and through OIC, and they basically take amounts of money and give it to commercial investors or general partners, and they then evaluate what's prudent and what's not prudent and make their investments. But what we're saying is we're going to put you in a conflict of interest position, because as a trustee, your responsibility is to do that which is going to be best for your beneficiaries. And pensioners on future pensioners expect that pension money will be invested in what's going to be in their best interest. But this bill says, well, that is generally going to be the case, but also consider what's going to be in the best interest of Oregon, which may be contradictory to what's in the best interest of the people whose pension money is here. And it also says you're going to find a place to put $100 million at least into emerging businesses which may not have the return or may be of greater risk than other places they'd want to put their money. And so while I agree that there needs to be a mechanism for our investors with our money to be watching out for Oregon businesses, especially emerging businesses, to require that $100 million be allocated toward that, I believe puts them in a conflict of interest. And I think that it's not going to be sustained by the law, and I think that it's not appropriate to do that to pension money, and so therefore I will not be supporting this bill.
Okay. Representative March.
Well, certainly I'd much rather have the language prepared right now, but my intent is to work with the folks to make sure the language satisfies everyone that's raised a concern about it, and be happy to work with anybody to do that. Given the time frame we're in, I'm going to give it a courtesy to move it on and work it on the other side if it so makes it.
Thank you very much. Representative Hass.
I'm also one of the sponsors of this legislation, but I think given the new information we got from our lawyer, the Attorney General, and some of the possible consequences, and our lack of time to work on this or to amend it, I just think it's best if we hold off on this until we either have the time or not send a bad bill with a warning red flag on it to the floor. So I oppose it.
Thank you. Representative Klein?
Yeah, the only other comment I would make, it's interesting, for my own personal retirement investments, I actually have set a specific percentage of that aside and told the investment manager this can only go to socially and ethically responsible investments. Maybe that does partially tie the hand for my own retirement fund, but I think that's, for me, that's a value. And I think there are certain things that for me rise up to being important enough values. Had I been here as a young child in when the South Africa screen was put up, I would have supported that. Because that, I think, is a value, even though it maybe even reduces some of the wide range of options. But I think it's a value, and I think it's an important value to put up, especially with the conceptual amendments, what is really worded as a priority goal, as I read these, not a mandate. I think that's an important value to put up, maybe even if it does do a little bit of that tying of the hands.
Thank you. Any further comments? Representative Davis?
I just want the committee to know I'm not going to make a speech.
Do you mind repeating?
And we're grateful.
Well, I thank the committee for all the hard work, and the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hunt?
Aye.
Representative March?
Aye.
Representative Richardson?
No.
Representative Hass?
No.
I'm sorry.
She didn't hear.
No.
Representative Berger?
No.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. I need a carrier for the bill. Representative Greenlet has offered to carry the bill. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3613. Do I need to open a work session?
No.
No. Representative Richardson, we didn't put a carrier for your bill. Do you want to be the carrier?
I'd like to.
We will put that.
Well, I think so.
All right. Well, thank you, committee, and we're adjourned until we have some other bills to do. Thank you very much. We're adjourned. Thank you. Have a good Easter.